Blog Talk Radio. Welcome, everyone, to Life and Leadership Gap Analysis Series. On this series, we'll be talking about closing the gap on what we know and what we actually do. We are exploring the principles in motion, getting back to the basics by visiting all the greats that we know and love, like Stephen Covey, Patrick Lencioni, just to name a couple. Our intention was to bring together inspired minds for meaningful discussions about the principles of life and of leadership, and to explore the gap between what we know and what we are living and leading in terms of these principles. Are you sharpening your saw, like Stephen Covey said? Are you practicing your swing? Are you moving through superficial harmony in your team, like Patrick Lencioni says? We're your hosts. I'm Charmaine Hammond, and my co-host is Christine LaPierre. And together, we are working to inspire and develop healthy and well-developed teams. I've worked in correctional system, oil companies, nonprofits, and everything in between. And Christine has worked with everything from profit from manufacturing vehicles to growing consumer packaged goods. And our experience really, truly has covered all bases. Welcome to the series. Christine, I'm going to pass it over to you to introduce our incredible guest, Greg, today.
Thank you so much, Charmaine. Yes, I actually invited Greg Hewitt on, president of DHL Express Canada, and I know he's going to be able to share with us some really interesting insights around put first things first. For those that don't know, DHL is a global market leader in the logistics industry and covers off more than 220 countries when you really look at their inclusion with Deutsche Post DHL. I've had the opportunity to work with Greg, and observing him as a leader, he's very powerful and very charismatic, so it made perfect sense to get his perspective on our life and leadership gap analysis. So again, I'm going to welcome Greg onto the show, and just to get started, I'm going to ask Greg, when I invited you on the show, you chose put first things first as one of your favorite principles, and I wanted to invite you on and ask you to tell us more about that.
Thanks, Christine, and hello, Charmaine. I'm happy to be on the show and share a bit of insight today with your listeners. Christine, when you asked me to appear on this panel and have this discussion, you were talking about revisiting some of Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and one of the ones that rung true to me and to our business at DHL is the concept of first things first. One of the things we say around here is keep the main thing the main thing. And so when we look at our strategy globally and bringing that right down to how we execute that locally in each country, it starts with focus, and it starts with really identifying what are the few key things that we're going to focus on within a given year and prioritize to make sure we drive the most value for the organization. And so I thought that was a good place to start, and I can share with your listeners some things that have gone really well over the years and what we're doing today to really embrace kind of first things first. But then I can also share some where we've been or come from, and at times how we didn't use that principle, and it led to us being a little lost and challenged from a profitability standpoint. So that was my logic and reasoning, and hopefully in discussion with yourself and Charmaine, maybe I'll also be able to learn what other business leaders are thinking in this area and how they're applying it as well every day.
Thank you, Greg. That sounds good. And I'm going to be interested to hear kind of your examples of times that maybe your organization wasn't putting first things first versus when they were and how it changed things. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Sure. I think maybe I'll start with the beginning. And when I think of first things first, our global CEO is Ken Allen. And I had the benefit of working directly for Ken when he was the president of DHL Express in Canada. 2005. And that's, he really embraces this concept of keeping the main thing the main thing. And our global strategy now, which we call Focus, really embraces that. But if I go back to 2004, one of the things that he said to me when I was a VP of sales and marketing in a business that was struggling here in Canada, we'd gone through a merger with a domestic company, merging in with DHL, the international. We tried to do that very quickly, and in doing so, we'd really eroded customer loyalty. Our employees were disillusioned. Our service quality had dropped, and our profitability had suffered. And when he was brought in to kind of right the ship and correct the direction, one of the first observations he made to myself and the team was he complimented us by saying, you know what, as a team, you are really, really good at identifying initiatives that would add value to the business. But then he quickly followed it up with, but what you're not very good at is executing on them or finishing any of those initiatives off. So you start a lot of them, and they're with good intention, but you never complete them, and therefore you don't unlock the value. So what he was doing there, and I tie it back to first things first, he challenged us at the time to take a look at that laundry list of tasks or initiatives and to prioritize and rank them based on those that would have the greatest impact on the business. And then he said, maybe take three, at most five, and execute on them excellently. So prioritize, attack them, and then if you want to go back and revisit that long list after you finish them, that's okay, but don't get distracted. And what we did was start to change the way we did business, and we focused on doing just a few things, implementing those projects on schedule, measuring the results, and amazingly what we saw was improved financial performance, improved service performance, and improved customer experience, and that started to change the financial position of the organization. So it really started way back when with him saying, you need to identify not just what could be done or should be done, but which will drive the most purpose and value for the organization. And when you read the concepts in First Things First, it's really the analogy that Covey uses is that the concept of the clock and the compass, right? That moving from just making decisions guided by the clock or scheduling tasks to that of doing it on the compass, which is those tasks and initiatives that are driven by purpose and value. So we put that in motion back in 2004 and started to write the ship. So that's kind of my first kind of introduction to putting first things first.
I love that story, Greg. I really do. And a thought that just came up for me, if I can share it, is I do a lot of work with nonprofit organizations and entrepreneurs. And what you said just rang out so true for what I hear from these client groups, Greg. You talked about focus and picking that main thing, the priorities, and then executing. And what I hear from a lot of nonprofits and entrepreneurs is that they tend to put their energy working on what's fun and what's easy to get off the to-do list first, which, of course, leaves the main thing till the end. And often the big rocks don't get finished for them. And I think what you've talked about, that importance of having a focus and choosing the main part of the business, is so critical. A lot of the nonprofits are telling me to secure funding and keep funding, they've got to really diversify their services. So it means that they're working in areas that maybe are not their absolute reason for being in service to others. And what happens then, of course, is they become great at a lot of things, but they don't necessarily become the credible expert in their field. So I think what you've talked about, Greg, is really important for for whether it's a for-profit company or entrepreneurs or even the nonprofits in our communities?
Yes, Charmaine, I think that's the Covey talks about the balancing the urgent versus the important, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we all can fall into the trap in any business, and I mean even in our personal lives as well. The urgent is always right in your face, right? It's
yes.
It's always there, and it's very easy to get trapped in the idea of being busy and keeping busy. And it takes real discipline to really prioritize and say, what's important? What do we need to work on that will drive the most value for us? And quite often, those things aren't the most fun. They're not the easiest. They're sometimes the hardest, right? Like,
yes.
I think on his, he puts exercise up in that one. How many of us consider ourselves too busy to commit to a proper physical exercise regime to keep our bodies healthy, right? It's the same way in business. Quite often, the big rocks that are of the most value are not easy, and they take a lot of energy and effort to move, and it's difficult when faced with conference calls and small little fires and crises and all of the things that can distract us. It really is difficult to stay focused, and you have to plan that into your calendar. Use your calendar to block off chunks of time that allow you to dedicate it to those important matters. And then you need to have a way to measure your effectiveness in it and make sure you're making progress there.
And one thing that I have to say, Greg, just while you're talking about this, I keep thinking one of the issues that I see is that we're awarded by being busy and we're awarded by being responsive. And if you think about, for instance, when you look around a lot of companies that I work with, for instance, a lot of people are given accolades for answering emails so quickly. Oh, she got back to me really, really fast. Or they're given accolades for working really, really long hours. And I have a lot of question around whether or not we as, you know, I guess leadership, you know, and people who are serving these companies, you know, are we helping people stay aligned with the important objectives versus these busy work, you know, maybe highly urgent but not important objectives that come on their plate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you think you see that as well, Greg.
Absolutely, Christine. And again, I'm probably guilty of it too. I think they call it the Protestant work ethic, right? Come in early, stay late. There still is this mindset out there that the number of hours a person works helps determine their value and worth. And I do think in the one thing that the electronic age has brought with us in the dawn of email is there is this someone else's important might be your urgent or vice versa, right? And it's this idea that we need to respond. So I think the challenge is I don't think that's going away. I think what you have to do is properly schedule your time to allow you to do both. So as an example, personally, and maybe it's because I've got a bit of OCD to me, I really value a very clean inbox, both in email and voicemail. It doesn't mean that during core business hours when I should be working on something important, I'm diverting that and doing emails. But what it does mean is that in the evening or early in the morning, before I might be having those important meetings to move projects forward or meet with customers or meet with other important people within the business, I prioritize for me doing that cleanup that to me allows me to have that clean inbox to make sure that I'm responding to both my internal and external customers and giving them what they need from me, but I'm not doing it during a time when I should be focused on something of greater value.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the bigger challenge, and it's a deeper conversation, comes how do you find the work-life balance? Because what I find is you have to find balance and imbalance. And unfortunately, to get some of those urgent distractionary things off your plate, it does often come at the sacrifice of some of your personal time, right?
Yeah. Yeah. this conversation about email, Christine, I'm really glad you raised it because it's something I hear all the time from corporate clients. And Greg, your suggestion is brilliant in terms of using that time where you're not needing to be physically with your clients, internal and external, so that you can keep that inbox clean. I read a report several years ago now, and I think it was by a researcher named Lisa Finley, and it was a fantastic report about email, and she was suggesting what you've just put out there, Greg, around how you manage your time and energy related to email. She was suggesting that when we manage our email effectively and have that cluttered-free inbox, and when we check our emails only at certain intervals during the day instead of having it running in the background, leaders can actually gain up to about 2 hours of productivity. So talk about being able to put things first and then keep your mind on the business when you gain that amount of productivity back.
I think that's a really sound insight. And I think it's not just carving off the time. I think you do have to apply some of the highly effective habits by organizing your inbox correctly, by carving out how your filing system is going to work, and then really prioritizing and understanding which of those emails that are coming in are both urgent and important, responding to them, and other things that are more, I think of the mass reply to all and CC everybody on everything. Those can be saved, and when you have time or lulls, they can be filed and read more at leisure. So it really does come down to, in your schedule, blocking the time and then organizing the tool itself to be able to help you quickly identify what you need to respond to. And that's at a very tactical level. I think of it, when I think of first things first, for us, it starts with our strategy. And at a global level, we have this focused strategy that looks at four pillars: motivated people, exceptional service quality, loyal customers, and profitable network. And underneath those four pillars, we only agree to do a maximum of three kind of strategic initiatives each year to move the business forward. And globally, that mandate gets put out, and then it's up to ourselves in a country to say, okay, how do I apply that strategy and that principle here, and how do I keep that main thing the main thing? So there's no deviation. And any time we start to want to do things that are not under what cannot be very easily put underneath one of the pillars or one of the overarching initiatives, we get called out on it, we get challenged, and we get questioned, why would we be diverting resources away from the focus strategy? And I think having that structure, and that's something Ken Allen brought to the business globally when he took over in 2009, and the key piece being in 2009, 2010, 2011, and now in 2012, the strategy is still called focus, and it's still got the same four pillars, and we're still working through a manageable number of strategic initiatives globally and strategic local initiatives under those pillars, and the business performance globally has improved dramatically from a business that was losing quite a bit of money back in 2008, 2009, to one that's making quite a bit of money now as we head towards the end of 2012.
I think that's great, Greg, and I'm thinking about, as you're talking about strategy and putting first things first, the one thing that I have to ask you, it keeps coming to mind, is as you take on those new initiatives each year, what role do multiple metrics play in that? Because one thing I think about, I noticed that because our technology is getting so strong and so many of the businesses that I work with are becoming so much more sophisticated at measuring different metrics and measuring different indicators, what's happening in a lot of businesses that I see is that their metric scorecards are going longer, 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 which is actually really watering down the strategy and the vision on what they're really trying to accomplish. I just am curious, Greg. Do you see that in your business, and how do you tackle that?
It's an excellent observation, Christine. I think we probably all have gone a little scorecard crazy, right? So we all want to measure everything to the nth degree. And I think, to your point, you can almost become paralyzed with data, that there's so much information, so many measurements, so many metrics, that you can wind up confused or really you can have the scorecard can be manipulated, used in any way to tell any story. So I think what we've tried to do is not squash the gathering of metrics and data at the front line or at the most grassroots level. I think what we did as a management team, and I sit on what's called the Americas board, so with other country managers from North America and South America and Central America, we work with our functional counterparts to come up with a dashboard under those four pillars I mentioned. And we said there were only going to be a few things under each that we're going to measure and look at every month. Now, aside from the financials, because you're always going to look at your P&L, and that's the measurement of the business's success for the shareholder, right? But under those pillars, we said there's only a few things that we're going to look at, and then the functional lead has the responsibility monthly to gather the data and present how we are doing at a country level against those targets, and then the country manager, like myself, I'm responsible for talking about any gaps to those metrics, or if we're really successful, share best practices. So again, it just comes down to planning, and we spend a lot of time up front saying what are the initiatives that we're going to do and activate under each of the pillars, and what are the key measures going to be, and where we can keep those consistent year in and year out, so that you're not measuring something different every year. And we've been able to identify kind of a top three or to five under each of those four, so that we're really looking at somewhere between 12 and 20 key metrics every month.
I think that's really important what you've talked about, Greg. I see it all the time in companies. And actually, years and years ago, when I worked for government, we were measuring absolutely everything. In fact, I remember an exercise. They were doing some revisions to job descriptions, and so all of us had to go through the task of measuring in 5-minute increments. So basically, we spent about 3 hours a day tracking our time for a period of month complete period of 1 month. And then the manager said, this is just not good use of time. We're spending about 10 to 15 hours a week. We're losing 2 hours a work day to track what people are spending their time on. But what was very useful about that was that all of us learned that there was a lot of time that we were either duplicating one another's work or not adding value. The tasks that we were busy doing were not necessarily adding value to the big vision. So I really like your comments, Greg, about having a balance in the metrics.
Yeah, I think it's I think that's critical, and it's a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
We still have, when you get down to the functional levels, we still have very detailed scorecards and a lot of measures that managers do need to help them run the business. I think the key is, what are the things that you need to look at every day, every week, and every month to move the business forward? And that's a project that we're working on right now. I have very good visibility monthly on how we're doing on those key KPIs under the four pillars. I have really good visibility into the P&L on a monthly basis and how that's moving and trending versus prior periods, prior months, and against our plan. What I've been challenging the team to do is, from the myriad of reports I get every day via email, I want to drill down to what is a really good daily operating report that will give my management team at a glance in 5 minutes or less, a pulse check on the business? And how does that daily report tie into a weekly report that gives us a better confidence level on knowing what the month-end results will be? So trying to get ahead of that curve, and we're wrestling through that project right now. We're excited about where the results are going to take us, because we're learning that there is a lot of energy and effort and work and rework that we're uncovering as part of this that we think we can streamline and strip away and get to something that's a little more focused, a little more aligned with our strategy and the key initiatives under those four pillars, and give people a better feeling about running their area of the business every day and week, so that the month-end financial is kind of a lagging indicator. We're confident we've done the right thing, taken the right action to drive the best result.
And the thing, I think, just to your point, Greg, you know, even from the work we did together, where, you know, once you have all those operating reports, even challenging the managers to be out there to see if the working level is actually spending their day putting the same things first that you've put first as a leader and as a visionary. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely agree. It's interesting, Christine. We had a gentleman by the name of, and I may butcher his name, but Dr. Eric Pelikanen from Deutsche Post this week, and he's a Lean Six Sigma expert, and he was in to lead something we call the Gemba Walk, which is kind of a review, a cross-functional review of our operation and our processes to look for areas for improvement and to reduce kind of defects and failures. And one of the things he was talking about, this concept of the lean manager, is getting management out of the boardroom looking at PowerPoints and reports and actually getting into the field to do observations. And I questioned myself in front of him, saying, I don't know that we, the experts, myself as the president, my head of ops, my head of commercial, those guys are, I guess, have the background, the training, and the knowledge to really provide the insight as we make observations at a Six Sigma level. And I was mulling it over in my head, and he said, based on what he observed and heard from my team, just the fact that we had changed our dynamic from kind of a monthly, two-day boardroom PowerPoint-heavy session to only every 6 months having kind of a formal business review that's only 2 hours long and has some slide content, and that on a monthly basis, as we visit our facilities, it's walking the floor, it's watching the shift, and even if I may not be a subject matter expert, a process engineer or an industrial engineer, just having observations on things that may not look right or may not be logical, bringing those forward and challenging the business to manage by managing the business and observe it, he felt we were already a long way along in kind of lean management, that the power of observation, the power of critical thinking and just asking questions and sharing different perspectives is how change occurs and how the status quo gets challenged. And again, I go into it asking very specific questions about our people and what we're doing to motivate and engage and excite and train and actively lead them. I ask questions and make observations around service quality and what we're doing to drive customer experience. I specifically ask questions about customer loyalty and what are our customers telling us and what are the touch points they want to see us improve so that we can move the business forward and gain loyalty. And then on the profitable network side, it's about what are we doing for the network, how are we performing, and it's about our productivity. So asking questions about asking our frontline people, our couriers in my business, what can we do to get you to take more, to do more stops in a day? What's impeding you from getting over 50 stops per route or to 60 or 70? And taking that information and talking about it and tinkering with and changing our strategy, but not really changing it, adding to the initiatives that sit under those four pillars. So to me, as you said, observation is critical. It's not just what's documented and what you think is being done. It's what you observe and see that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Greg, that is fantastic, and thank you again, because all this, I mean, we could get into lots of conversation around this. Obviously, there's a lot of depth to each of these elements of how we actually put first things first in a large organization, right from the strategy level down to the level of execution. So I think everything you've shared with our audience is insightful and great stuff. Just to close, let's go around and see what each of us thinks is probably the most important question or takeaway or idea that we'd like our listening audience to leave with. Greg,
well, maybe Christine, maybe I can start. And I guess for me, it really comes down to being from a strategy level right down to the tactics of day to day. It comes down to understanding urgent versus important, and really identifying what are the most important priorities for your business or your person, and then making sure that through your chosen time management system that you block off the appropriate amount of time and energy to really accomplish the important while not and avoid the trappings of getting pulled into non-important, urgent work. So that to me is the most critical thing of first things first, because it works at a strategic level and it works at a tactical level.
Great. And Charmaine?
For me, I'm just going to build on what Greg was saying, which was fabulous. It really matters. How leaders show up and how business owners show up really does matter. So for us as leaders, it's so important to make sure that they are absolutely clear on what the big vision of the company is and what the overarching goals are, so that their actions are congruent. And then that we, of course, support the team to be able to have the skills to determine how to put first things first, so that that comes through in their daily business activities as well.
Yeah, and I think just to close, I would add to what you just said, Charmaine, and understanding how people in the organization are awarded mm-hmm. to support putting the same things first that strategically you're trying, you know, the leadership is actually trying to put first. So I think that, to me, would be a takeaway. How are people incented and awarded to continue to build on that strategy? So, again, thank you, guys. This was a great conversation. And thanks, everyone, for listening, and have a great night.
Conference recording has stopped.